Hello and welcome to the committee. I am Representative Connie Bernardi, and we are having the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee meeting today in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kreshaw. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, present.
Meckland, present. Representative Knorr.
Knorr, present.
Knorr, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson. Representative Albright.
Present. Representative Kreshaw will be joining us shortly.
Okay, thank you. Albright, present. Representative Kreshaw. Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason. And Representative Thompson. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And may I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 17th, 2021.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Knorr, who moves approval of the minutes for March 17th, 2021. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails, and the minutes for March 17th, 2021 are approved. Now I will hand over the gavel to Vice Chair Christensen.
Members, we will be taking up House File 993 from Chair Bernardi today. The bill contains the governor's budget recommendations that we walked through on February 17th this year. We'll begin by giving Chair Bernardi a chance to introduce the bill, followed by a walkthrough of each of the provisions by the Office of Higher Education. And then finally, we will have time for member discussion and questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an honor to be here today to present to you House File 993. The bill is the governor's higher education budget recommendation to fund the state's higher educational opportunities for our students throughout our state of Minnesota. A large portion of this bill addresses the disruptions to learning that had taken place over the past year. Our students deserve the opportunity to be successful. The investments included in this budget would help make this a reality for them, not only addressing learning loss and ensuring our students are on the right path to thrive after the pandemic. With that, I have the Office of Higher Education Commissioner today, Mr. Olson, who will walk us through the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Go ahead, Commissioner Olson, please state your name and proceed. Welcome.
So, Vice Chair.
Oh,
go ahead. If you could just recognize Commissioner Olson. I'm sorry, I didn't hear if you did.
Yes. Did you hear me?
I did, yes. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Christensen and Ranking Member O'Neill, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dennis Olson. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Thank you, members, for the opportunity to return to the committee to provide a more detailed walkthrough of House File 993, the Governor's Budget Recommendations for Higher Education. This budget recommendation is first and foremost a response to the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as a path forward toward educational and economic recovery for Minnesota. Much like we outlined during our initial visit to the committee in February, it was also guided and developed by key principles that were designed to propose policy and related funding that is rooted in equity, to alleviate barriers to access, retention, and attainment in post-secondary education, to support research-based and results-based programs that have proven to be effective, and to provide student-centered programs and services designed to support the whole student. And Madam Chair, one final note before I begin the walkthrough of the bill line by line. I wanted to just take a moment to share that, you know, although I'm aware that the governor's revised budget recommendations are not before the committee today, I did want to take a brief moment to make members aware of some of the revisions to the governor's original budget proposal before walking through the bill line by line. After a lot of work and engagement with stakeholders and with community members and, of course, with legislators over the course of the legislative session thus far, the governor has decided to reinstate and restore previously proposed budget reductions and program changes to some existing appropriations as part of his revised budget. I wanted to first note that the governor is recommending to reinstate the spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury grant program. And the governor recommends funding the program at the current base amount of $6 million over the biennium. The second item is that the governor is recommending to reinstate the large animal veterinarian loan forgiveness program and also recommends funding the program at the current base appropriation of $750,000 over the biennium. Thirdly, the governor is recommending rescinding the proposed language that would have established a competitive grant program to organizations that serve individuals with autism. And the governor recommends retaining the current direct appropriation to the Minnesota Independence College and Community, MICC, in the amount of $2 million over the biennium. And the final item on the governor's revised budget list is to recommend an additional $14 million over the biennium for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities operations and maintenance line item. This recommendation will fully fund their request to the governor and to the legislature this session. And again, Madam Chair, I know this is not before the committee in the bill today, but I wanted to make note of that. And as language comes up in the bill, I will once again note those recommended changes. So I'd like to take the opportunity to walk through the bill and highlight the changes. I am joined today by members of our team at the Office of Higher Education who will all be available to answer any questions that may come up following the walkthrough. And Madam Chair, I'd like to begin with Article 1. And if it's okay, Madam Chair, I'm going to point to the specific line item numbers that I have changes that appear, and if I do not address specific items, it means the governor is recommending a base funding amount. So I'd like to point members first to line 2.5 through 2.8 related to the Minnesota State Grant Program. The governor is recommending an additional investment of $6.3 million over the biennium in the Minnesota State Grant Program. This amount includes a reinvestment of $5 million from fiscal year 21 funds that will cancel back to the general fund this year. We'll describe that balance cancellation a little bit later in the bill in Section 6. But this recommendation, along with utilizing the current projected spending balance for fiscal year 22 and 23, will allow the state to maintain the current living and miscellaneous expense, and you've heard us describe that here as LME, currently set at 110% of poverty. Without this additional investment recommendation by the governor and the reinvestment of the current spending balance, students will actually see a reduction in their awards as the LME percentage will revert back to current law, which is 106% of poverty. This investment recommended by the governor will provide stable, predictable grant awards for students. And you've heard testimony from numerous students representing the University of Minnesota, from Minnesota State College and Universities, from Minnesota's nonprofit private colleges, you know, that noting that the stress of the pandemic has only exacerbated worry of expenses beyond tuition and fees. And of course, the costs associated with housing and food and transportation and childcare, et cetera, you know, all are weighing on students every day. So this additional investment will provide both larger grants and more money for living expenses, again, helping to address growing food and housing insecurity created by the pandemic. I'd next like to point members to line 2.11 through 2.15 related to the Interstate Tuition Reciprocity Program. The recommendation for this program is to reduce the annual appropriation by $2.5 million annually for a total of $5 million reduction over the biennium. The annual obligation to North Dakota over the past few years has been around $8.5 million a year. So this recommendation aligns the appropriation with the recent year's obligations that Minnesota has to North Dakota. Next, Madam Chair and members, I'd like to point you to line 3.12 through 3.20. This is related to the Intervention for College Attendance Program. The governor is recommending here an additional $1.43 million investment for a total of a $3 million investment over the biennium. This program is a competitive grant program that supports post-secondary institutions, school districts, nonprofit organizations, and professional associations as they prepare students from underserved communities for college. This program serves the whole student by supporting social-emotional learning, college knowledge, financial well-being, parental involvement, and basic needs issues, in addition to providing academic support and college visits and career exploration. I'll note for the committee, the last RFP generated over $1.7 million in annual requests. So this recommendation aligns with the program, with anticipated need. Next, Madam Chair and members, I'd like to point you to line 5.12 through 5.18 related to the Summer Academic Enrichment Program. And the governor is recommending an additional $1 million investment for a total of $1.5 million over the biennium. This additional investment will allow more organizations to offer academically rigorous summer learning opportunities to more students, providing them with scholarships to attend summer camp experiences. I'd like to move to line 6.25 and 6.26, or I'm sorry, 6.5 and 6.6, the Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students Grants Program. The governor here is proposing a $1.3 million increased investment in emergency assistance grants for post-secondary students. Students experienced unexpected emergencies, as we all well know, well before the pandemic, and they'll continue to experience unexpected emergencies after the COVID pandemic is behind us. Data from colleges that received and administered emergency grant programs from the state reported utilizing the state emergency grant funds completely by the first semester. And we had some colleges report to us that they utilized their full allocation of emergency grant support within weeks of the start of the first semester. This has been a successful program with institutional match and foundation dollars required, but the current appropriation really only scratches the surface. We had over $800,000 in requests during the last application process, and we were only able to award $175,000 per year, which is the current base. This, of course, was our pre-COVID demand, and we know that'll only increase as we continue to work through and build from recovering from the pandemic. So this recommendation brings the program closer to meeting the need for more institutions. And finally, on that note, as you've heard from students, again, representing two-year colleges and four-year universities, both public and private, students were feeling the stress of food and housing insecurity. And I think this was most notable in Representative Wolgamont's Hunger Free Campus Bill testimony that we heard from students. Next, Madam Chair and members, I'd like to point you to line 6.27 to 6.32 related to grants to teacher candidates. The governor here is recommending an increase of $5.4 million over the biennium for student teacher candidate grants program. We know that the current funding for this program is not sufficient to provide the awards at the maximum award amount allowed by statute to all students who are eligible in current law. The governor proposes increasing the appropriation to this program and focusing the awards on future teachers that will fulfill specific shortage areas. With additional funds, the program will be able to award more eligible teacher candidates and may allow for an increase to the max award. Based on previous applicant pools, the increase in funding combined with a policy change to target the funding to teacher candidates of color and American Indian teacher candidates, as well as teacher candidates from institutions located in Greater Minnesota, will more likely result in all eligible teacher candidates receiving awards. Next, I'd like to point members to line 8.8 to 8.12. This is grants to support individuals with autism spectrum disorder. And this appropriation language is related to the new competitive grant program that was originally proposed. And again, I'll make note, similar to the note in my introduction, that although it isn't in front of us today, the governor's revised budget does remove this language and reinstates the direct appropriation of $2 million to the Minnesota Independence College and Community. After consulting with multiple stakeholders, again, and legislators, the governor decided to maintain the current appropriation to the organization. Next, I'd like to move to line 8.13 through 8.15. Related to the Workforce Stabilization Grant Program. The governor here is recommending a $35 million investment over the biennium for a new program that'll provide last dollar grants to public colleges, public universities, and tribal colleges for workers that have been impacted by COVID-19 and lower income students enrolling in a high need program at participating colleges. This provides individuals whose jobs and careers have been impacted by COVID-19 an opportunity to reskill and re-enter the workforce. And this critical job support will help displaced workers pursue an education in a high demand field, leading to future job stability and increased earnings. We'll provide a more in-depth overview of the program design and eligibility when we get to the actual language of the program in Article 2. Next, I'd like to point members to line 8.16 through 8.18. This is related to the direct admissions program. And the governor here is recommending a $1 million investment over the biennium with a small ongoing cost in year two for a new pilot program that creates a proactive college admissions process for Minnesota public high school students entering their senior year. This program is an initiative designed to remove barriers in the college admissions process. We understand this bill is being heard tomorrow in committee as a standalone bill. And so we'll review the specific program language in Article 2 of the bill, and we'll answer any questions you may have ahead of tomorrow's hearing. Next, I'd like to point you to line 8.19, agency administration. The governor here is recommending additional funding of $137,000 in fiscal year 22 and $177,000 in each subsequent year from the general fund to maintain the current level of service delivery at the Office of Higher Education. This appropriation is offset by cancellations from fiscal year 21, which you'll see later in the bill in section 6 under cancellations. This change represents a 0.1% increase relative to the agency's base general fund budget. Next, Madam Chair and members, I'd like to point you to line 9.27 through 11.8. This is related to the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities operations and maintenance request. And again, the governor originally recommended an increase of $63.5 million over the biennium for the Minnesota State system. And although the governor's revised budget, again, isn't in front of us today, I wanted to note for the committee that the governor's also recommending an additional $14 million here as an appropriation for Minnesota State, which fully funds their request for O&M. So the total governor's request will be $75 million for operations and maintenance, as well as the original $2.5 million request for student basic needs and mental health support. And you can find that specific provision on line 11.1 through 11.8 of the bill. Next, I'd like to point you to line 11.2 through 12.25. This is related to the University of Minnesota's operations and maintenance request. And the governor is recommending an increase of $46.5 million over the biennium for the University of Minnesota's operations and maintenance, fully funding their budget requests to the governor and to the legislature. Finally, the section 6, line 17.23 through 17.30, the cancellations. The first cancellation you'll see there is that the governor recommends a reduction of $340,000 to the general fund operating appropriation. The fiscal 21 operating reduction amount reflects the savings that were generated due to the state hiring freeze and other operating efficiencies in the current fiscal year. The second item you'll see there is the Minnesota State Grant Program, which has a current projected spending balance of $5 million in the current fiscal year, and that will be canceled back to the general fund and under the governor's state grant proposal reinvested as part of the $6.3 million request for the state grant program to maintain living and miscellaneous expense at 110% of poverty. And Madam Chair and members, that concludes Article 1 of the bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Perhaps we could take questions at this time for Article 1. Are there any member questions?
And Madam Chair, if I may, it may be easier to just walk through Article 2 really quickly, too, to get the actual program design language through and then retain the remainder of the hearing time for questions.
Perfect. Good advice. Commissioner, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the flexibility. And I will just move right into Article 2 with just a few more minutes for information sharing here, and we'll get to questions. So, members, I'd like to point you in Article 2 to line 18.3 through 19.19 of the bill. This is related to the concurrent enrollment grants. This language before you establishes the program in statute and expands the usage of the grant. In addition to utilizing the funds to establish new concurrent enrollment programs, grants can also be utilized to create opportunities for high school teachers to receive the necessary credentials to teach concurrent enrollment courses in various content areas. This change is recommended because expansion of current concurrent enrollment programs has somewhat plateaued, and it hasn't been because of demand or need, but simply because, you know, we know there will not be enough instructors qualified to teach the courses that will exist in 2 years, let alone continue to expand. The Higher Learning Commission added additional requirements for concurrent enrollment instructors, and many of them no longer qualify with their current credentials. So this gives them an opportunity to not only expand programs, but also utilize funds to establish new pathways for high school students or high school teachers, excuse me, to obtain those necessary credentials to continue teaching. Line 19.2 through 21.9 relates to support for individuals with autism spectrum disorder. And again, as I mentioned in Article 1, the governor is recommending to rescind this language and not pursue a competitive grant program at this time. The governor is recommending to maintain the current appropriation to the Minnesota Independence College and Community, MICC. We'll, of course, continue to work with stakeholders and with the community and with legislators to potentially develop a program to address the need that was identified by other programs and providers in the future. Line 21.10 through 21.31, the Minnesota State Grant Program, LME. Specifically on line 21.15, this change strikes the 106% and inserts the 110% of federal poverty in line with the recommendation to maintain LME at the current funded level. In line 22.1 through 22.10, related to the Minnesota State Grant Developmental Education eligibility. This proposed change allows students to take necessary developmental education courses and still maintain eligibility for Minnesota State Grant awards, ensuring students don't run out of eligibility prior to completing a credential or a degree. line 22.11 through 24.14. This language establishes the workforce stabilization program. This program will provide last dollar grants to workers and students that have been negatively impacted by job disruptions caused by COVID-19. Specifically, Subdivision 3 establishes eligibility through two unique pathways, with impacted workers eligible at a family gross income of $80,000 or less, or a student with a family adjusted income of $50,000 or less. Subdivision 4 outlines the eligible programs. It requires the Office of Higher Education to collaborate with the Department of Labor and Industry, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, as well as participating higher education institutions to identify high need eligible programs that would lead to a credential or certificate, a diploma or a degree. Subdivision 6 specifies that grant awards cannot exceed tuition and fees after deducting all other grant and scholarship aid, and also specifies the grant maximum awards, which are capped at $14,000 for students enrolled in four-year programs and $7,500 for students enrolled in less than four-year programs. On line 24.15 through 24.15 through 25.9, related to the child care grant eligibility, this language expands eligibility of students receiving awards. Specifically, line 24.25 changes the eligibility from period of enrollment of 10 semesters to receipt of a grant for no more than 10 semesters. Line 25.1 changes enrollment eligibility from 6 credits to 1 credit in either an undergraduate or a graduate program. Related also to the child care grant award, I'll point you to line 25.10 through 26.2. Awards per child would be benchmarked to the maximum federal Pell Grant, and students who qualify for a Pell Grant would be eligible to receive the maximum award, and students with incomes above that level would see their awards reduced proportionally. This language allows awards to be prorated based on the student's enrollment level in the same manner that Pell Grant eligibility is calculated. Line 26.22 through 27.6 is related to the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program eligibility provisions. Line 26.25 and 26.26 adds language that includes enrolled members of tribal nations in addition to students that meet the current one-quarter blood quantum eligibility threshold. Line 27.24 and line 27.26 aligns award eligibility consistent with all other state financial aid programs, allowing students to receive awards for a full academic year, either 3 consecutive semesters or 4 consecutive quarters. So think of the summer term now being eligible in line with other state financial aid programs. Line 28.6 through 29.14 relates to the student teacher candidate grants. And this proposal simplifies the language. It targets funding to Black, Indigenous, and people of color teacher candidates and teacher candidates attending a school in Greater Minnesota and teaching in an identified shortage area. There may be additional ways to try to target funds to students who intend to teach in Greater Minnesota. However, the more complicated the eligibility requirements, the more complicated it is for students to know whether they'll be eligible to apply or not. So really the goal of this provision in the program is to encourage eligible students to enroll in and complete a teacher preparation program. The expectation then is that those students will fulfill the identified teacher shortage areas. Of course, as we've heard, you know, a more complicated process may reduce the effect of the program on actually increasing the number of eligible students enrolling in teacher preparation programs. Next, Madam Chair, members, I'd like to point you to line 29.15 through 30.2. This is related to the dual training grants. Now, this language eliminates an automatic priority in application related to the number of trainees who are recent high school graduates that's currently preventing quality programs from being awarded a dual training grant. And then related to that, line 30.3 through 30.31, This language eliminates the requirement in the dual training grant program to provide grant funds to an applicant solely for training recent high school graduates. The language adds the requirement to review criteria, in addition to adding to the review and the employer's ability to recruit, train, and retain employees from marginalized populations. Line 31.1 through 31.21 relates to the direct admissions pilot program. And this language here before you today establishes the direct admissions program. And more specifically, Subdivision 1 requires the Office of Higher Education to develop the program in consultation with stakeholders, including the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the Minnesota Department of Education, the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, and the Minnesota School Board Association. Subdivision 2 outlines the goals for the pilot program, which aim to work with existing student information systems utilized by high schools and school districts, and focuses the initial pilot on high schools with a significant number of students of color and low-income students. As mentioned before, this program will be heard tomorrow as a standalone bill, but of course we're here to answer any initial questions you may have today. And Madam Chair, again, I appreciate the flexibility, and that concludes Article 2 and concludes my walkthrough of the bill. And again, I, along with other staff, are available for any specific questions you may have at this time. But again, I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee once again today, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner. We do have member questions. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So, first of all, I just want to thank the governor and his staff, and I'm not sure who he talked to because it wasn't me and I'm the minority lead, so I'm not sure who exactly you mean when he talked to members of my party, but nonetheless, I am very grateful for the reinstatements. So the reinstatements of the spinal cord research, the reinstatement of the large animal vet forgiveness program, and to reinstate MICC. I appreciate that the governor was listening to our concerns, not only of mine, but also of my members. Now, something that has happened in the last couple days, and since I'm on Ways and Means, I get to hear probably more than some of the members on the committee, but one of the things that we discussed at great length was the SR money that's coming through, SR3 package. And so the big federal package is coming to us. The higher ed area is supposed to be receiving $552 million. Now I realize that's over not just this next year or the next year after that, it could be expended all the way probably till 2025, depending on the category. And I also know that that money is, it's very kind of open as far as where it gets spent. My concern is that the governor and his agencies will just be spending the money without legislative approval, which I adamantly am opposed to. That's $552 million. So in the change items that we've had that you're obviously are not in this bill, but how were discussed, the governor in his budget proposal initially was $149.5 million over base. So $149.5 million over base. And now he's looking at increasing that to $170 million over base. And on top of that, like I just said, $552 million will be coming for higher education, specifically from the third federal package, with very little legislative oversight, as far as what I understand the words of his administration in Ways and Means. So my question is, if we're going to take state appropriations and increase to over base of $170 million, is that going to be coming out of the COVID money, or is that on top of the $552 million COVID money that's coming from the federal government? So that's just the first question I have. Madam Chair, if I could have an answer from the commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you. Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. First and foremost, thank you for expressing your appreciation for restoring and rescinding the program cuts. I appreciate that. To your question, this process is separate from the funds that are coming from the upcoming federal bill. That is a process that has yet to be developed. This is the process from the governor's original budget proposal. And so, you know, to the best of my knowledge, none of these funds have been earmarked from federal funds, but are solely dependent on state investments.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thank you, Commissioner. Well, I'm going to speak very loudly to the governor, since apparently he's listening to us in committee, and through you, Commissioner Olson. I think that a very good use of the $552 million coming from this federal package, the third federal package, would be to backfill this $170 million that we're proposing to increase across the board. So that's my first ask. And certainly we can do that. We just had a bill on the House floor today, $107 million for K-12. It had all kinds of different new grants and new appropriations, and it was done with the understanding that it would be backfilled with this the federal package coming. So that is my ask. Now to some of the specific components of the bill. Most of the things we've already discussed. And I am going to reiterate some concerns that I have. The direct admissions program. We've discussed this at great length before, but I'm going to restate my concerns. We're spending $1 million to basically tell high school seniors what they should already be told from their high school counselors, that if they want to go to a Minnesota State University or college, we used to call it Minn State for that reason. So, used to call it Minn State, now with Minn State, they can enroll and they will be accepted because that's just how it works here in Minnesota. So I think $1 million in creating a whole new system just seems like a big waste of time and money. So if the governor's still listening to us, I would ask that that program be set aside. I think it's kind of a redundant approach. And then I do have a question for the commissioner. So the workforce stabilization grants, it sounds an awful lot like the dual training program that we already have and has been working very well. And I should say something about the dual training program too, very quickly. When we first wrote that bill in 2015, I was the chief author and Senator Bonhoeff was the chief author in the Senate. We did not have a prioritization of seniors. That was added later after she had left office. And I was no longer in the higher ed committee. So I believe that came from the agency, although I'm not 100% certain, but now we're taking it back out. And I would say that's a really good idea because I think we need to be more expansive in who we're trying to capture. So that's a good thing. But my question is this workforce stabilization grants, how is it similar? How is it different than what we're already doing with the dual training program? And it's significantly more money. So if you could explain to me the similarities, the differences, and why create a whole new program now. It seems to me it looks an awful lot like the dual training program, but with a lot more money in it, millions and millions more.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. If I may, I have two staff members on with us today. One who oversees the administration of the dual training grant program, as well as Meredith Fergus, who assisted with the development of the workforce stabilization program. And I'd like to give them an opportunity to be able to draw some specific distinctions between the two programs.
Meredith Fergus, would you like to answer?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Meredith Fergus. I am the Director of Research for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. The dual, and Ms. Fitzgibbon will correct me if I say anything wrong, because she knows dual training grant much better than I do, working with it every day. The dual training grant program is a program that engages employers to send incumbent workers back to training so that they can qualify for and upgrade their skills so that they stay at the same companies, ideally, that they're currently working at. It helps develop the workforce in-house for that employer and provides a benefit to the employee in receiving training because they get promoted and can receive a higher salary. Under COVID, we know that employers don't necessarily have those funds and they can't really promote training and in-house when they're struggling to make their businesses survive day to day. So the goal behind the governor's initiative was to provide a broad-based program where workers whose current employment was at risk because of COVID-19 and the resulting economic conditions to have a pathway to re-engage in training so that they can be essentially occupationally and career mobile during this time so that they can secure a better future for them and their families. The second pathway within the governor's workforce stabilization grants is for low-income students who may have had to drop out or otherwise discontinue their education because of COVID-19, such as they stayed home this fall to help with remote learning of their children. So that's the broad-based overview, but I would defer to Ms. Fitzgibbon for other detail.
Megan Fitzgibbon, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Megan Fitzgibbon. I am the State Financial Aid Manager at the Office of Higher Ed. And Meredith did get the dual training grant comparison pretty well. There's two specific distinctions, I'd say. One is that the dual training grant does require, it is a grant to employers. So it's not a grant directly to students, so the person has to be employed already. And the Workforce Stabilization Grant is intended to help students or potential students who likely may not be employed at this time. The point is, one requirement is that they had to have received unemployment within a certain time period to qualify. And so that's one factor. So it's about getting them reskilled so they can be employed, as opposed to with the dual training grant where they are employed and would be part of a grant that goes directly to the employer. And the other piece is about, there's two pieces with the dual training grant that aren't specified in the workforce stabilization grant at all. It's one, there's an OJT, an on-the-job training component that is required under the dual training grant that employers are agreeing that they're doing. They're setting up a dual training program for their employees where they might be doing related instruction at a higher education institution or through some other training provider, but the employer is also providing on-the-job training support and on-the-job training opportunities that go along with the training that the student is getting. The other piece is that the training, whether it's the related instruction or on-the-job training for dual training grants, all is required to lead towards, or most of the, at least the grant-funded parts, are going to be, are leading towards competencies that have been identified through a process with employers through the Department of Labor and Industries pipeline program. And so it's where an employer is seeing or is hiring people who don't have specific competencies, and they are setting up a dual training program in order for them to meet those competencies. They do have to, in order to get grant funds, they have to end up with some kind of credential at the end, but it doesn't necessarily have to be an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree. It could be an industry recognized credential. It doesn't have to be academic. Those are all things that are slightly different with the workforce stabilization program.
Representative O'Neill?
Yes, thank you. Okay. I still think that's an awful lot of money compared to the dual training program. That's an unbelievable amount of money. Okay, and then my last question is, I recall when MnState was here, I believe their ask was $130 million. But you, Commissioner Olson, you've stated a couple times now that this $75 million of O&M is their full ask. So I'm really confused. Wasn't their ask $130 million when we started this whole process back in January? And now is it only $75? I'm really confused as to what happened there.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. Yeah, you are correct. Their entire proposal is larger than $75 million, but $75 million was their complete operations and maintenance ask. It's the number one ask of their entire package. They also had some additional initiatives for student mental health and student basic needs, which the governor is also supporting with a recommendation of an additional $2.5 million. They also had a large scholarship program proposed, very much similar to the workforce stabilization program that the governor is proposing here in this bill. And I will just note, although seems to be, you know, some sticker shock with the amount associated with the workforce stabilization program, it is proposing to serve over 20,000 students and impacted workers per year. So a very significant impact for the significant proposed budget.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Then help me understand, the University of Minnesota was $46.5 million, and the governor has, in his initial budget and in this budget, provided their full ask. And I know that they have some, as they always do, capital requests and things like that. But is that their full O&M, or is, help me understand what the governor's thinking is at providing the full ask right off the bat to the University of Minnesota, but not the Minn State system? And is he going to propose making up to the $130 million that the Minn State system asked, or are we just going to be, is he just sticking with the $75 million?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. Yes, you are correct. The full O&M ask for the University of Minnesota was $46.5 million. And now with the governor's revised budget, both the Minnesota State College and University's O&M ask and the University of Minnesota O&M ask is fully funded, or recommended to be fully funded.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have. I know I have members that have questions as well.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Chair Christensen and Commissioner Olson. I have a question too about the direct admissions program. First of all, I wonder if a program provides that any Minnesota high school graduate is admitted to a campus of Minnesota State and is at any of the campuses. I wonder if the program also eliminates any application fees for the student, and if the upon admissions the student is guaranteed the grants, loans, or jobs that she or he may need to pay the tuition through the first or second year while in school.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Sandell. I will probably phone a friend with Ms. Fergus, but I will say that, yeah, if a high school senior does stay on track, yeah, they will be guaranteed admission to Minnesota public colleges, primarily the Minnesota State College and University's system, both two-year and four-year. We do also have significant interest in participation from the University of Minnesota, as well as member institutions of the Minnesota Private College Council. There are multiple opportunities throughout the year for students to apply for free during specific college application months. There are also opportunities for those fees to be waived for low-income students or students that may need a requested waiver for that. But that is a potential component of the program design. And I'm sorry, what was the second part of your question, Representative?
Thank you, Commissioner. It's ordinarily a student on admission will be informed that there will be grants, loans, or jobs available to him or her, and is that included or guaranteed in the program?
Madam Chair and Representative Sandell, that they will still be required to apply for all financial aid. They will still be required to fill out the FAFSA, which will help determine those awards. Meredith, I don't know if you wanted to add anything further there.
Yep.
Meredith Ferris.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Representative, So the direct admissions program allows students who would normally self-select out of going to college to actually know what colleges they'd be admitted to kind of encourage them to go. As you remember, we have a very low college going rate among low-income students and students of color. And so it's really important to address equity initiatives as well as kind of educational attainment issues in greater Minnesota to kind of defeat that self-selection bias that our system is occurring. The letter that they receive from the direct admissions program helps them kind of skip the process, the first part, so that they get an automatic yes from the colleges to say, yes, we do. You can come here. We are ready for you. We are prepared for you. It then dovetails with the existing admissions process. So the college, if the student says, yes, I'd like to move ahead in the admissions process with your college, it dovetails with the existing admissions and financial aid processes and would automatically move the student into those guarantees if the institution currently does them. So they'd get their financial aid letter. They'd get other information from the college directly.
Representative Sandel.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Christensen. And thank you, Commissioner. Thank you.
And Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my questions are for the Commissioner. First of all, Commissioner Olson, I really, really appreciate the way you walked us through these two articles. I'm one who likes to be led to the particular lines of change or new within a bill, and I really appreciate that rather than just reading from a nonpartisan's review of the bill. So thank you so much for that, because that really was helpful for me. So my first question is, how many new programs are in this proposal? Is it more than three?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. Certainly the Workforce Stabilization Program is new. The small direct admissions appropriation is new, and I believe that's it. The rest, I guess you could categorize as somewhat new, but more of a redesign.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Commissioner, I heard you say something about a change in the Higher Learning Commission requirements. Is that different from the requirement that there be a master's in the content area in which the concurrent enrollment teacher teaches? Are you adding something else or know of something that we don't know about?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. No, that is what that relates to. There is nothing additional that's been communicated that I'm aware of from the Higher Learning Commission.
So, Commissioner, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner, what I find interesting is the fact that these concurrent enrollment teachers, like I was once upon a time, do know from the get-go that they have to have a master's in their content. So, you know, we constantly, and we do this in the K-12 bill too, provide some supplemental support for them for their graduate courses. If they're not eligible for, I imagine you're referring to the enrollment training program that we have in the K-12 bill. Is that correct?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. Yes, that is correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So that makes me think that there's, you know, a bit of redundancy in this proposal with the K-12 proposal. And I'm going to look at that more carefully in the next couple of days. But one final question about the Workforce Stabilization Grant, this new program. Why not consider giving appropriating this money to something like the Summit Academy that does such great work in preparing for the workforce? Now, it's true that it's mostly men and women, of course, who are older than high school age, but they probably weren't employed. But it seems to me that we're lacking, if we're not going to support a program like that, or the American, I think there's also an American Indian Occupational Training Center in Minneapolis. But, you know, Dr. King at the Summit Academy, just that those programs are just so fantastic for the candidates who come there. And, of course, he tells them, you know, that the only savior for them is a job. He discourages any kind of pursuit of welfare. He said the best welfare is a job. And I really appreciate his attitude that he instills in these candidates. But I'm always surprised that there's not a relationship between the Office of Higher Education and what he offers, because his program is so right on point.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. And we do have a relationship with Summit Academy. I see Meredith turned on her camera. Meredith, did you want to offer anything additional there?
Madam Chair, apologies. Thank you. Representative Erickson and Madam Chair. So Summit Academy and the Dakota Institute, which is the name for American Indian OIC, actually both do have existing relationships with the Office of Higher Education. In prior years, they actually participated in state financial aid. One of the kind of internal things that we flagged for the commissioner is, as institutions develop non-education-based training programs, how do we at OAG kind of need to adapt to meet those needs? And I anticipate, while we've pretty much given the commissioner a couple of ideas, we really need to meet with that group and actually work them into a firmer kind of realm of possibility. It would include programs that offer, say, registered apprenticeships or other kind of non-higher education institution-based training. So it is an emerging area for us, Office of Higher Ed, but we have heard your concerns.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Olson and Ms. Burgess, also, because I learned a lot from your answers. Thank you.
Next up, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, thank you for coming before the committee today. This is not a simple process, and I appreciate your tenacity with the questions that we ask. I'm going to draw your attention to just a few comments. The first one is with regard to both the Agricultural Loan Forgiveness Program and the Aviation Education Loan Forgiveness Program. And it's really more of a commentary, but I would appreciate your feedback. It seems that both of those categories, in terms of foundational industries in this state, that while we are continuing their base funding, we all know about the attrition, particularly in both industries, whether it be in agriculture or in aviation, that we wouldn't want to incent or compel those that might be on the fence or have the desire but not the financial wherewithal to continue with their studies or continue with their dreams of either being in agricultural, whether it be farming or in economics or what have you, or for aeronautical, aerospace engineering, maintenance, or in the pilot seat as well. And I'm just wondering what the observations were surrounding both of those programs and why we continue to just give base funding but not incent by offering a higher level of funding for those two programs. And Madam Chair, I have just two follow-ups after that.
Thank you. Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. Appreciate the question. We have not been approached anytime recently with a request for increased funding for either the Large Animal Veterinary Loan Forgiveness Program or the Aviation Loan Forgiveness Program. Certainly would be open to any additional ideas or any additional funding proposals you may have to help meet an unmet need out there, but we have not heard of anything recently.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, I will refer to line 2.25, which is the American Indian Scholarship. A couple of questions there in terms of, I note that Bemidji is to serve as somewhat the fiscal agent for that scholarship program, but does it also infer that Bemidji is the only university system that would afford scholarships for their students, or is it the students' flexibility in terms of where they would like to attend, not just Bemidji?
Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. The language related to a staff member located in Bemidji is actually a historical holdover from when the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program was administered by the Minnesota Department of Education. And at that time, the Office of Indian Education had field offices in Bemidji as well as Duluth and Twin Cities field offices outside of the Minnesota Department of Education's central office. Bemidji is located in the heart of the three largest tribal nations in Minnesota. And so it makes sense that there is a on-the-ground resource there for a majority of the students who are accessing the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program. But no, it does in no way limit the program to Bemidji State University. BSU has been an incredible partner in providing office space for our contract outreach liaison to help administer the program. But it is completely administered and overseen by the Office of Higher Education, and it's a statewide program.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, I would next draw your attention to the funding that starts for the University of Minnesota, particularly in the area of medicine and educational appropriations. I think it's on page 12. And I'm just wondering if those, simple question, but if those appropriations have been in consult with the medical director and or the medical staff and the leadership over at the University of Minnesota, making sure that we continue to be kind of the crown jewel of medicine in the upper Midwest.
Mr. Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. That would be a question for the University of Minnesota. This is all retained base funding that it had been included historically. There are no additional recommendations from the governor for any of the rider languages related to healthcare and medicine. My assumption would be those were developed in consultation with those that oversee those programs, but that would be a question specifically for the University of Minnesota to give you probably a better answer than I'm able to provide.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And final question. Mr. Olson, starting on line 8.24 and continuing through line 9.15, it has to do with the transfers between these various operational issues. Candidly, it's worse than a bowl of spaghetti in terms of an appreciation for the possibility of where this money is supposed to go. If it's not used in one, it could be used in another, or it could be used in there. You know, one might say that this is a means by which that you can stockpile money for a future rainy day. I'm just wondering, I know that this language has been in existence for many, many years, but I'm wondering if you have given any thought to, from a transparency issue, just reverting that unused money or cancellations back to the general fund, as opposed to retaining it within the budgets of the various divisions within OHE.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. And I may ask our financial aid manager, Megan Fitzgibbon, or Meredith Fergus to weigh in here, but I will just say that because of the nature of sending a majority of our appropriations out the door, the transfer language is very important to us because it allows us to reallocate potential unused funds in one program to serve students in another program that may be experiencing a shortfall. There are differences in financial aid amounts that vary from not only year to year, but semester to semester. And, you know, we utilize our best calculations to project, you know, either spending deficits or spending balances. And ultimately, those funds do cancel at the end of the year if they aren't utilized to backfill shortfalls in other financial aid programs that go directly to students. In terms of transparency, I will say that the process in my eyes is completely transparent. We do hold public meetings for projections of the state grant award balance and, you know, publicly report that not only to those that show up to the meetings, but also to members of the legislature, not only the chairs of the committees, but all members of the committees. That is well notified. Meredith, I don't know if you wanted to weigh in anything additional there.
Meredith Fergus.
Madam Chair and Representative, I did just want to add that having worked at the Office of Higher Education for the past 13 years in kind of the same capacity, we have received explicit legislative direction that we are to spend out as much of student grants as we have. I believe the last time I heard it publicly was from Chair Rukavina, who was very adamant that the Office of Higher Education was not to return student grant money to the general fund if need be. So I just wanted to add that in.
Thank you. Representative Albright?
Madam Chair, and to the final comment, I'm sure that Representative Rukavina, rest his soul, was a stalwart champion of education, particularly in the Iron Range, and we all miss him very much.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Thompson.
Just real quick, I heard someone talk about Summit OIC and the program Lewis King has, and I think that's an awesome program. In fact, there's a lot of youth and a lot of young men and women in my district are going to the University of Minnesota, University of Bemidji, or University of nothing. They get out of high school, they got to go right to work. And so when we talk about career pathways, we talk about higher ed, what gets hired for them? And then we talk about programs. We talk about programs that can get them into these career pathways. And then I hear things like, well, this is way entirely too much money to spend. And I think spending nothing is not enough. And I also think that you can't put a price tag on our future. And so these kids are our future. And I'd be like, call me when we get there. That's where I'm at with it. And I call, because like it just feels like we're having a conversation, and it's like, well, my side here says this, and my side here says that. Well, who got the kids' side? Who has the people's side over here? I don't care. I'd be like, let's get there as far as education goes. Let's get there. And also, think about the kids who are not going to college, who can't make it to college. There are different career alternative career pathways that we could be funding also. And I do see this in the budget. I almost feel like people have a problem with the governor. And not saying myself, but I feel like people have a problem with the governor. I keep hearing the governor. And the people need our help. So I'm hoping that we can get there. Like, call me when we get there, too. Like, I'll be right there at that meeting.
Thank you. Did you want to respond, Commissioner Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Thompson. And again, to the offerings of Summit Academy OIC and the Dakota Institute and other training providers, much like Representative Erickson said and how Meredith responded, we are looking forward to building more relationships and opportunities for students through those pathways as well. So thank you for highlighting that, Representative Thompson.
Representative Thompson, any more?
Yeah, because we talk about Summit and the American, like we named two, but I can give you 30 more different organizations. And then we start talking about these organizations as if, like everything that we've, if you've been in this body 22 years, everything you've tried to do hasn't worked. So scrap it. like that's where I'm at with it. Like if you've been in, and everything that you tried, like take the funding away from that. And put that into different programs. We're in 2021. You know, something new about 2021 was the pandemic. That's new. And so I think that we're going to have to start being creative and innovative on how we fund things for our community, especially mine.
Thank you, Representative. Next up, I believe we have Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Olson. A couple of things I want to say is just thank you. I think that we talk about equity a lot in education and really to close these achievement gaps and provide opportunities. You know, we have to be mindful in where our funds go. And so I do appreciate you seeing some of that. I appreciate MICC coming back into the conversation about allocated funds. But more importantly, I really appreciate the work that we're doing around the language when it comes to our Indigenous individuals. Not just, we all know the numerical genocide that is created through enrollment and having to have a quarter blood quantum. And so I appreciate the extension of that because it's one thing to add money to something. It's another thing to understand how it can best serve a greater population. And so I just want to, in this space, say that I appreciate that. And I know communities that look like me and the communities that I work with appreciate that. But I do have a question. It's actually like kind of between 28.6 down to 28.31 in all of the student teacher candidate grants. I know that we're talking about increased teachers of color and also to support Greater Minnesota. Can you kind of walk me through how that allocation is going to be divided into those areas? Is there a clear split between the two? How are we going to make sure that, you know, 100% of the funds aren't just going one direction, that they're actually being used in both of those spaces?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler. If I may, I'd like to turn the question over to Megan Fitzgibbon.
Megan Fitzgibbon.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for the question. When we looked at the most recent couple of years, of course, this program is actually fairly new. It's only 3 years old. We compared the applications we've received from the institutions in Greater Minnesota, as well as teacher candidates of color and American Indian teacher candidates who've applied, and not just those who've received it, but also just who those have applied. And the split that we compared that to would allow, and the numbers that we looked at would allow us to cover all of those students with the increase in the appropriation. So we didn't recommend, the governor didn't recommend any type of specific allocation for either of those two groups because our expectation is with the increased appropriation, we should be able to cover almost all, and I would assume all of the potentially eligible students with the modified language.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so can you just break down numbers for me? Like what is all students? What are those numbers? And for going off past data and the numbers that we've used, we're not anticipating any increase. Like we see that our graduation rates from high school are going up with our minority students. So, I mean, I think that there should be an increase in expectation that as we have more BIPOC students graduate from high school, the goal is that we recruit them into our higher ed program. So first question is the numbers, like if I can get the actual numbers that you used and like why we're not taking into consideration the potential of growth.
Megan Fitzgibbon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. We can certainly get, I don't have the numbers right in front of me that we looked at, but we can certainly get those to you after the hearing today. But I will say that the one benefit we do have in this statute is that we can modify the max award. So we assume we would be awarding the maximum award, which in statute right now is $7,500 per year. And remember, that's $7,500 for one term. Because it's in the one term that the student is doing their student teaching that they're eligible for. And right now we're only awarding 5,000. That's what we've set our max award is to try to spread the limited dollars across. And when we looked at the last couple of years, we did determine that we would be able to increase this to 7,500, and we would still have money probably left over. And so our expectation was that we would have be able to get up to that 7,500. And if by chance we had more students, maybe in the future, we could reduce the maximum award in order to accommodate those to make sure that as many students were eligible got it. But hopefully we wouldn't have to reduce it such that it would be so significant that it would impact them. But we can certainly get the numbers to you after the hearing today.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would appreciate those numbers and probably a follow-up conversation about it at some point in the near future. I look forward to you all reaching out. Thank you.
Next up is Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to circle back with the whole conversation about transfers, I understand that there's supposed to be a report to the legislature, and I'm asking Commissioner Olson if you could actually present that in committee as to which funds were transferred to something else. So you were talking about instead of canceling to the general fund, canceling to other accounts. And so as far as transparency goes, you know, I don't recall that presentation back in 2014-15 when I was vice chair. I don't recall that conversation here in higher ed this year. And I'm just wondering if you would do a presentation. I realize we're going to have this bill yet a third or fourth time, and I don't even know how many times we've gone through this bill when we have the governor's actual change items that are before us and we do the markup for the omnibus bill. But at that time, that would be a wonderful time for you to come and show us in the past biennium which accounts actually did cancel into other accounts as opposed to canceling to the general fund. I think that's kind of what Representative Albright was getting at. I'm wondering if you could please do that presentation when we come back to do the markup of, because it's relevant, right? I mean, when we're doing the markup of the omnibus bill for higher ed, I think it's incredibly relevant. And we're talking about over $4 billion of money in total for the higher ed department or higher ed committee. And so I'm that is my ask for the sake of transparency and public transparency. It's very, very difficult doing everything remotely like this. And some people have got multiple screens going just to be able to see different things. Some of us have got things printed out all over the place. And so I think that presentation would be incredibly helpful. Thank you.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. I completely hear you. I have more screens than I care to own up in front of me right now and things printed all over the place, printed on personal printers. And yeah, looking forward to get back to the office at some point too. But to your point, it's typically the transfer process is not a presentation. We'd be happy to walk through the most recent letter that we sent to chairs of the committee and members of the committee and outline each individual line item that was included on the letter. That typically does happen outside of session related to the just timing of the closeout of the fiscal year, but you know, happy to do a brief walkthrough of the items on the letter if that would be helpful, or I can, you know, be happy to send it again along with previous letters that were sent in previous biennia.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my ask is in addition to just a letter to members of the committee that we actually have a conversation about it here in the public, in the committee itself. It's something that is of great interest to myself. I know to Representative Albright and others when we're talking about instead of canceling to the general fund, which is typically what accounts do, they're not doing that. And so anytime that we do a diversion from what we normally do, we would love to have that conversation. So my ask is, can we please have the conversation here in this space for both us as members to look through that and also for the public to hear it? Thank you, Commissioner.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. Heard loud and clear. Be happy to do whatever is requested from the members at the direction of the chair. So willing to come back if that's necessary.
Thank you. So members, is there any further discussion? Representative Bernardi, closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I want to thank Commissioner Olson for his thorough presentation today. It was very easy to follow and it was very informative. So thank you very much. And I appreciate the members' engagement and the questions that they asked. I just want to give a shout out to the Commissioner Olson and to the whole staff at the Office of Higher Education. I know they put their hearts and souls into helping our students across the state have the opportunity to earn their credentials. And it not only helps the students, but their families, as well as the whole state of Minnesota with economic prosperity and being successful. So I want to thank you for all your efforts. And with that, we will end the conclusion of this testimony today. I appreciate the opportunity for the members to have heard your bill and thorough. And then we will be coming back after our break and be going into passing a higher education bill outside of this. And I this out of
think you're freezing up, Chair. Okay, so no more discussion? Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Bernardi will renew her motion that House File 993 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill, and the bill is laid over. And with that, folks, thank you, and we are adjourned.